The Healthy Alabama podcast is sponsored by Enroll Alabama, a program that enrolls Alabamians in the health insurance marketplace. Navigators provide free local in-person support to all applicants. Enroll Alabama, 256-432-7494, 256-432-7494.
Welcome to another episode of the Healthy Alabama podcast, sponsored by Enroll Alabama, and produced in partnership with Praise 90.1 FM WJOU. I'm David Person. Today's episode is also coming to us courtesy of our friends at Global Ties Alabama. And we want to thank them for connecting us with our guest today. She is internationally known as an advocate against female genital mutilation and other atrocities that are committed against women around the globe, including this nation. And her name is Angela Peabody. Angela, welcome to the Healthy Alabama podcast.
Thank you, David.
You believe that female genital mutilation is a problem not just on the African continent, but here in the United States.
That's correct.
Explain that to me.
Well, I'm an immigrant, and my contention has always been that when we immigrants come to a new country, we tend to bring our practices with us, our cultural and traditional practices. Therefore, if we bring the dances and the music and the foods and clothing, what else would we bring? Any other practice, cultural, traditional practices that we practiced in our country of origin, we will bring with us. And if we think, whether it's legal or not, if we think we can get away with it, we will practice it. And that has been my contention about female genital mutilation.
So just to be clear, you're saying that not only do you believe that it's a problem, you know it's a problem.
Absolutely. It is a problem. I know it is. And just this past April, the FBI had major arrests in Detroit, Michigan. They arrested two doctors and one of the doctors' wives for practicing it right in their clinic in Greater Detroit.
Okay, so for those who don't know what we're talking about specifically, and this may get a little graphic, but I think it's important that people are clear about what we're talking about. Explain to our podcast listeners what female genital mutilation actually is.
Female genital mutilation, more commonly known as FGM, and in some cases they describe it as female circumcision, is the intentional removal of either all or part of the external female genitalia. And it's for non-medical reasons. There's no medical reason why they do it. It's strictly traditional and cultural.
Now, you said that it is also known as female circumcision. And in the United States, and I believe in perhaps even other nations, baby boys, when they are born, are routinely circumcised. The foreskin of the penis is removed. It's believed that this actually promotes good health for the male child as he grows up. But you're saying that there is no medical reason or no public health reason for the removal of any of the external parts of a baby girl or a female's genitalia.
That is correct. I have two sons, and they were both born in Liberia. And my husband and I had them circumcised when at infancy. And it's because of cleanliness. We believe that that skin
right.
that is removed, as you described earlier, is for a medical reason. But when you remove, there is no medical reason to remove the clitoris off the girl. There is no medical reason to remove the labia. So it's cultural. It's traditional. It can be done from as early as infancy.
Okay.
And the most popular age range would be between 7 and 15.
Why girls? Why do they wait until they're 7 or older as opposed to doing it at infancy? And again, that's not even to suggest that they should be doing it. We're in agreement they shouldn't be. But why do they wait?
Well, first of all, I want to go into the history a little bit about female genital mutilation, where it began. It originated in Egypt more than 5,000 years ago by the pharaohs. The pharaoh that was in power at the time decided that in order to keep their daughters virgins when they got married, they would have that done to them so that they will have no desires, no sexual desires to go out. And even after they are married, they will not have desires to want to roam or step out or on their husbands.
To cheat on their husbands.
Yes. So that's how it all started in Egypt. And then later it trickled down to sub-Saharan Africa, parts of the Middle East like Oman, Iraq, Afghanistan, Yemen, in parts of Asia, such as in parts of India, Indonesia, Malaysia, and today it's practiced in 26 countries in Africa. It has now, through immigration, it has now spread to Australia, to many countries in Europe, such as England, Germany, France, Norway, Sweden, Denmark. It is in North America, Canada, and the United States.
Is it connected to any particular religious point of view?
Absolutely not. And I always clarify that to people when I speak that it has nothing to do with religion. I have spoken with Muslim imams, and it's not in their doctrine. It's not in their Quran. It's not in the Holy Bible. It's not in the Judaism Torah. Mm-hmm. So it has nothing to do with it. It started when it predates religion, actually, because the pharaohs started it back in Egypt.
So it predates the organized religions that we know of today.
Yes.
The major religions, the Abrahamic faiths.
Yes.
Okay. So you're saying this is cultural. So in modern societies where this is still being practiced, what is the rationale? Is the rationale the same, that fathers think that, or mothers, or both, think that by mutilating their daughters, it'll prevent them from, it'll cause them to be chaste, faithful women? Is that pretty much the logic?
Yes, the logic is control of the woman or girl, control of either my daughter or my wife. Mothers are the ones. Sometimes fathers stay back. They don't get involved in it. But the mothers and grandmothers and aunts are the ones who actually take the girls to have it done. And they really believe, they truly believe in their hearts that it's an act of love, that they are doing it because the girl will not be marriageable. She will not be able to find a husband if she's not cut or mutilated. And you and I both know that is not true, but this is what they really believe because of the deeply rooted old cultural tradition. They
it's really
that.
Scary and chilling to me that women, you're saying women,
yes,
are the ones who are promulgating this.
Yes, yes.
So it may have started with a pharaoh, but now it's women that are doing
it. It's women that continue to practice it from generation to generation. I have had young women say to me, well, my great-grandmother, it was done to my great-grandmother, to my grandmother, to my mother, and to me. Therefore, they want me to do it to my little girl, but I don't want it. I want it to end with me. I want it to stop here. And so that's what my business is. That's why my organization advocates against it, And we make it our business to teach people in the United States as well as the world the dangers, the health risks. That's what those mothers and grandmothers really don't know, because they are in remote villages in Africa or Asia or the Middle East, and they think that they are doing their little girls a favor.
But what about the ones here? Don't the ones in North America and in other more westernized societies, don't they understand the health risks?
Again, like when I first started, I gave the example. I live in Northern Virginia, and when I moved from Alexandria, Virginia, to Centerville, which is a good distance, there were no African markets where I could buy my food, my Liberian traditional food in Centerville. I used to get in my car, and my son and I would drive all the way to Alexandria to where we could buy food. That is the passion that these people have, no matter whether you live in North America, in the great United States. If you believe in what you're doing or what you want to be done, you're going to go all out to get it done.
All right, so let's talk about the health risks. What are they?
Hemorrhaging to death, and it has happened many times. I personally know families that have lost people from that, the child hemorrhaged to death. Difficulties using the bathroom, something simple as that, because there are three types, major types of cutting that they do. The first type, they cut off the tip of the clitoris, where the sensation is. They want to remove that. The second type is called the clitoridectomy, where they remove the entire clitoris and they remove the labia minora. And then the third type is the most drastic. They do the clitoridectomy, where they remove everything, and then they also remove the labia minora, which is called the big lips. And whatever skin is left, they pull it together and stitch it up, leaving just a tiny opening that is the size of my nail to accommodate urination. That can cause major infection. It can cause the girl, when she grows up, she's not going, first of all, she has problems when she menstruates. And when she grows up and does get married, she cannot conceive because she's been stitched up.
Right.
She cannot have sexual relations. She could die in childbirth even if she were able to conceive.
So again, I'm sorry to belabor the point, Angela, but again, it's just mind-boggling to me that a westernized woman, even with whatever cultural heritage she brings to this nation or to other Western nations, that she wouldn't, upon being made aware of these health problems, that she wouldn't say, you know what, as that woman who you talked about earlier, I'm not going to do this to my daughter. I'm not going to put her life at risk. I'm not going to put her health at risk.
Well, those are the young generations now, that the 30-somethings and even early 40s and the 20-somethings, they are the newer generations that are saying, it must stop with us. We don't want it to happen with our girls. But the older generation, they are so, it's so embedded in them that you cannot tell them the difference. You can, even though you tell them, this is what's going to happen to your girl when she grows up. These are the health risks. They are not hearing that because their minds have been so they have been programmed to believe in that traditional practice, that they don't see the wrong in it. And so the approach that we are taking, our organization is not to tell them you're wrong. We don't want to take an antagonistic approach to them. We want to sit down with them and dialogue and tell them, look, this is what happens, and this is proof. And we bring some of the young women who are suffering already and let them tell them in their own words and possibly in their own language that they will understand that this is what will happen to your daughter or your granddaughter.
And I imagine some of them may be thinking, well, I survived it, so she'll survive it as well.
Absolutely.
But what is the psychological impact on a woman who has been mutilated or circumcised?
The one woman told me, we call them survivors. One of our survivors told me that the physical pain she still lives with, but she said what she takes to bed with her every night is that psychological pain. That never goes away. If she lives to be 80 years old or 90, that psychological pain will forever be there. And that is the worst. So that's why we do counseling. We do counseling for the psychological effect. And then for the physical effect, there is the surgery that is now, that can now restore. We call it the restorative surgery that can restore most of what was removed when they were little girls.
The name of your organization, I believe, is Global Woman Peace. And PEACE is an acronym that stands for what?
People everywhere, all created equal.
Okay. How did you get into the business of, the nonprofit business of advocating against female genital mutilation?
Well, I'm from Liberia. I was born there and grew up there. And I remember my sisters and I were spared because our parents just didn't practice it. And that's why we were spared. But I had friends whose families practiced it. And one little girl who was my age at the time, 8 years old, it was done to her. As a result, she died in childbirth. When she went to have her first child, she and the baby died. And so I developed a passion for it. And I didn't know at the time as a child what it really was. But when I became a woman and a mother and a wife, and I realized what it was, what people were talking about, female genital mutilation, was the same thing that I had been exposed to as a child in Liberia as female circumcision. That's when I became angry, and the angrier I became, I took my journalistic attributes and I started writing about it.
Yeah, and I should add here, you are also well known as a journalist and a novelist.
Yes.
Okay.
And I wrote a book about it and called When the Games Froze. And I also just wrote magazine articles about it to help raise awareness to the public. And I just became passionate about it. And one day, one of my sons said to me, why don't you start your own organization? Because you're so passionate about this. And that's how Global Woman Peace Foundation was born.
What made your parents different?
Since I've already said it has nothing to do with religion, I don't want to say because they were Christians. But they were Christians and they were educated. And that is the only reason why I can think of. Because the tribal group that my father was part of, they practice it, but he didn't.
What was the community's response in Liberia? What part of Liberia did you grow up in, or what?
I grew up in the capital city, Monrovia.
Okay, so in your community in Monrovia, what was the reaction to your parents opting not to subject you and your sister to this, or did people even know?
People didn't know because, you see, we were in Monrovia. That's the city. So majority of the residents in the city did not practice it. So it was not an issue. Had we been living on the farm or in the rural areas, then it would have been an issue.
How would they have known that you were not?
Because it's an organized, like you mentioned before, organized religion. Well, this in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea, it is an organized, I compare it to sorority, but I don't like to do that because the sororities here are
entirely
it's a community, different.
It's a community event is what I hear
yes,
you say.
Yes, and okay. It's a society. It's a deeply rooted traditional society, secret society that carries out this. And they have the male side and they have the female side. And the female side called the Sande Society, the Sande Bush, that's who practices it. Hmm. And in the village, everybody knows that at a certain age, when the girl reaches a certain age, they take her, they look at it as a rite of passage to womanhood.
Mm-hmm. So your concern as somebody who's been living here in the United States for I think some time now.
Yes, 30-something years.
Okay. So your concern is that this is, that people from, as you said, from various African nations and Asian nations have brought this, and Middle Eastern nations, have brought this tradition with them to the United States, and that it is having a detrimental impact on young girls and teenage girls here in this nation.
Yes.
So what do you do? What do you actively do to try to combat this?
Well, we have two, my organization takes on two programs projects. We have programs that we call the rehabilitation program, and that's where we work with the young women who have already undergone it, where we counsel them, we raise money and send them to surgery. We counsel them when they come back from surgery, and we also assist them in resettlement if they are fleeing from their country of origin because they don't want it done to them. So we assist them to resettle. The other side is the prevention side. And that is the most difficult because these young women who have already undergone it, they can make their own decisions and say, I need help from you. The little girls whom we are preventing it happening to, they are still under the care of their parents. And their parents will make that decision. So we are trying our best to get into the school system to teach the teachers. The teachers need to know, have full understanding of what it is. The school nurses, the guidance counselors, the principals, everybody in the school needs to know. And law enforcement, mm-hmm. they need to know. Because if the police is called to a home, how can he or she can protect the girl if they don't know what the parents are trying to do to her?
Angela Peabody is the president and founder of an organization called Global Women Peace. And PEACE is an acronym that stands for People
Everywhere, All Created Equal.
People everywhere are created equal. And the primary objective is to combat female genital mutilation, or as it is also called, female circumcision. I want to thank you, Angela, for joining us today on the Healthy Alabama Podcast.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure, David.
Thanks once again to Global Ties Alabama for connecting us with Angela Peabody for today's episode of the Healthy Alabama Podcast. And the executive director of Global Ties Alabama is our friend, Jackie Shipe. Thank you, Jackie. The Healthy Alabama Podcast is produced in partnership with WJOU, Praise 90.1 FM in Huntsville, Alabama, and is sponsored by Enroll Alabama. The theme music for the podcast was produced by DJ Bailey. I'm David Person, and until next time, be healthy.
The Healthy Alabama Podcast is sponsored by Enroll Alabama, a program that enrolls Alabamians in the health insurance marketplace. Navigators provide free local in-person support to all applicants. Enroll Alabama, 256-432-7494, 256-432-7494.